listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson. Welcome to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. On today's episode, what I'm going to do is talk about grid tie and off-grid power with Angry American, the author. And it occurred to me that before he became an author, he was an industrial electrician. So he's the person to talk to. I think it's timely to bring this stuff up right now because spring is upon us. And I think this might be a springtime project for a lot of homeowners out there as to should you put solar panels on your house, that kind of thing. Springtime is home improvement season, let's face it. But before we get to the podcast subject that I just mentioned, I'd like to just refer back to the Christmas episode, Christmas 2018, that came out last month. And normally, when I put together a special episode like that, and same for the 2017 Christmas episode, I didn't really plan on that many people listening to it, but the Christmas 2018 episode, a lot of you guys have listened to that, and there have been a lot of downloads. It's really amazing. And considering the fact that Christmas is far in our rearview mirror now, people are still listening to that Christmas episode posted in December. So thanks, everybody. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I don't know why this one is so successful as opposed to the last one, which I thought the 2017 episode was funny also. I think the prepper world is noticeably lacking in humor, so maybe that's what's going on, why it was so successful. I have to admit, it was a fun episode. Everybody in Bedford Falls was very friendly, except, of course, for Mr. Potter, but that was to be expected. One thing that got on my nerves a little bit, I admit, is this whole business about who are you and why are you in color? That question was asked to me a few times, and I didn't know what to say, but it's kind of strange. I mean, of the two of us, when somebody in black and white and shades of gray walks up to you and says, why are you in color? The real question is, you know, of the two of us, I'm the normal one and you're the strange one. I guess what I'm leading up to is if that ever happens to me again, and somebody says, why are you in color? I'm going to say, why are you in black and white? You know, because that's the more pertinent question. I don't know. My nerves were a little frayed, as you can tell. I've never been struck by lightning once, much less twice in 30 minutes. So that might be it. I want to give a shout out to Harry Bailey. I had my disagreements with his brother, George, but Harry Bailey could not have been friendlier. As you heard, he gave a toast to me. At least I'm pretty sure it was to me. You know, when you travel back in time, you kind of feel a little out of place, but there's nothing that makes you feel more at home when somebody whose time period you travel to actually offers a toast to you. So that was really nice. I met him, talked to him a little bit during the breaks and the recording there. He was a really nice guy. I thanked him for his service, by the way. He's a Congressional Medal of Honor winner. He saved the life of every man in that transport. So I thanked him for his service. Good guy, good guy. Mary Bailey was friendly as well. I don't have the time to explain it, but I hereby claim credit for coming up with the idea for the Donna Reed Show, that sitcom that went from, I think, the mid-50s to the early 60s. That was my idea, and I don't have time to explain it, but if you listen to the Christmas episode 2018, you'll figure it out. Clarence the Angel was friendly. In one of the earlier tapings, I actually compared his nose to Jimmy Durante's nose, which I thought was funny. And during one of the breaks, Clarence came up to me and said, you know, don't you think that's a little over the top? And I said, you know, you're right. So I toned it down. If you'll listen to that podcast, I just said he just needs a nose job. And I just left it at that. It's probably a good idea not to piss off an angel, if you can help it. Although, if I really told him what I thought of him, he probably would not have liked it. I've had a problem with Clarence the Angel since, I think, the first time I saw that movie. He knew where the $8,000 was, and he didn't mention it. And when the smoke cleared from that movie, George Bailey's friends were out $8,000, and a despicable person, Mr. Potter, was $8,000 richer. all because Clarence the Angel, who could have told everybody what happened to that money, just decided to keep his mouth shut. Anyway, I'll leave that. But that was a good episode, and a shout out to Harry Bailey, good guy. And everybody in Bedford Falls was real friendly, except for Mr. Potter. Okay, let me make a few introductory comments about the topic we're going to be discussing here today, which is off-grid power or grid-tie power for your house. And let me just start off by saying, just in general, there are two types of electricity. One is DC, the other is AC. DC all revolves around a battery. If you are part of a system where electricity is generated and stored in a battery and then used from that battery, like, for example, your car, that is a DC-based electrical system. AC is what comes over the power lines. DC is, you know, you can transport a battery, obviously, like your car, but when you convert power from the battery to AC, you automatically lose some of that power. And DC does not travel well over power lines. Only AC power does. And they greatly increase the voltage of the AC power. And that's how they send it across the country in power lines. And then when that electrical line gets to your house, there's a transformer right outside your house. And that transformer, what that does is it converts the energy down to the voltage that is manageable, and then it goes straight into your house. So there are pluses and minuses to both types of energy. In the United States, when you plug in something into your house, and when the outlet looks like basically an 11, that is AC power. There is such a thing as a DC plug. That looks kind of like a T on its side. So that's possible. So that's basically AC and DC power. And I hope I'm not getting too beginnerish for everybody out here. What I'm doing basically is repeating a lot of the information from chapter 23 of my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat. All right, now on to grid tie versus off-grid power. Off-grid involves batteries. Grid tie, the main ingredient is solar panels. Occasionally, you will be able to use wind generators next to your house, just the propellers hooked up to an electrical generator, or microhydro, which I think is the greatest way of generating electricity. Microhydro is where if you have a river or a stream or a creek on your property that flows downhill, what you can do is scoop it uphill, channel it into a pipe, and use that pipe to push a turbine and then catch the water and then put it back in the river further downstream. And that's pretty simple, and it's clean energy. A lot of times, that generator will be just an alternator from a car. Before you do that, by the way, check with the local powers that be. Some jurisdictions do not allow it. Some of them do allow it, but you have to jump through a lot of hoops. But grid tie power, after you have some kind of means of generating that power, it goes into your house into an inverter. And that's the main component here, inverter, because that converts the DC power that you've just generated from solar panels, and then it converts it to AC, and then it hooks into the grid. And then at some point, your local meter will figure out which way the electricity is going and how much. And it's pretty rare that an electrical company will actually mail you a check because you've been generating more power than you use. That's pretty rare. Most of the times, what people are just trying to do is get their energy bill way down to nothing. A good friend of mine, his and his wife, had an electrical bill about $200 a month. And after installing a whole bunch of solar panels, they got that electric bill to under $10. All right, now here's another component to grid tie electricity. And the component is money, specifically government subsidies, because whether it's the state or the federal authorities, they are big time subsidizing solar power, almost all solar power. Sometimes there's wind generators that are being subsidized. But if you look into it seriously, the subsidies, it's practically like the government is paying you to put a bunch of solar panels on your house. And that's why when you walk into a Home Depot or Lowe's, whatever, that's why there's always a company or two making a pitch for solar panels on your roof of your house, because that company knows that there's a whole bunch of government subsidies at stake, and that will make it easier for you to pay them. And sometimes they just bill the government directly, depending on where you live. So that's a big part of the equation when it comes to grid tie power. In other words, when you see a house covered with solar panels and it's in a subdivision where you know there's a power grid, chances are that that homeowner has gotten a whole lot of government subsidies to put those solar panels on the roof. And chances are good that those solar panels have greatly reduced the monthly electricity bill of that homeowner. All right, let me get into off-grid. Now, this is potentially very expensive. Almost all the time, there will be no government subsidies for off-grid. And when you live way out in the country, you might not have any choice. I was on a mission trip in a third world country a few years ago. Well, I talked about it in chapter 23 of my book. It was an extremely simple off-grid system. There was, I think, two solar panels. There was a car battery. There was a backup generator, which is one of these Honda 2-kilowatt generators. Those things are great, by the way. And Honda engines just want to run. We basically warmed our water and we used a Shurgard shower when we bathed, and we had a little off-grid system there. It was minute, but that's basically an off-grid system there for you. A battery, we didn't have an inverter, which I would definitely not recommend. But for your house, this is what you're looking at. You're looking at some batteries that are huge. They are about waist high a lot of times, 1 or 2 volts a piece. They weigh about 300 or 400 pounds. And we're talking 24 or 48 volts for a house nowadays. You need to devote like a walk-in closet or a pantry and just devote it for the off-grid power, batteries, and all the electronics. And you're going to have to keep that room well ventilated too, because it's possible that some corrosive gases could be let loose. So keep it cool in there. Keep it well ventilated. Another thing is, not only are you going to have a bunch of solar panels or wind generators or micro hydro, but that power goes into your house. It goes through a charge controller, and then it goes into your battery banks. And then your batteries, it's critical that you keep them mostly charged all the time, you know, consistently mostly charged. If at your house your refrigerator turns on the same time that somebody uses the microwave, the same time that somebody uses a hairdryer, and your battery power goes down, you need to have a backup generator. And for most houses, 5 to 7 to 10 kilowatts is okay. That will do the job. But you hook it up in such a way that it will keep your batteries from being discharged. The danger with having discharged batteries, or batteries where the electricity power, you know, fluctuates widely, is that shortens the life of those batteries. So batteries are expensive. They last 10 to 15 years. You got to be careful with them. Like I said, a generator is pretty important for any off-grid system. You need to keep it separate from your house. You need to be extremely paranoid of carbon monoxide fumes. I'll never forget, a few years ago, I got a new generator with its own starter. I was playing with it out in the driveway, not even in the garage. Started up, turned it off a few times, and then walked through the garage and then walked out a door on the other side of the garage. And I immediately felt this horrible head rush. And then after I got out the other side of the garage, I thought, that's carbon monoxide poisoning. I just walked through a garage that was filled with it. And that generator was just out in the driveway. It was not even inside the garage. So be extra careful of the carbon monoxide fumes. And as an aside, that's why a lot of times it's extremely difficult to get approval for an apartment or some kind of a dwelling above a garage, because garages can fill up with carbon monoxide fumes and poison anybody who's living above the garage. So the days of Sabrina might be over with. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. The backup generator, Not only should you keep it away from your house so that you don't get inundated by the fumes, but you should also keep it in its own enclosure so that that way it doesn't alert the whole neighborhood that you have a backup generator. These things can be noisy, and if you can have one and maybe two, you know, one like a doghouse size structure enclosing your generator and then something else enclosing all of that, that would be probably the best way to do it. You can have duct work coming in for the intake of the air on one side and maybe exhaust on the other side. It's probably a good idea to have these generators hooked up so that they run automatically just to warm up maybe once a month, just for a few minutes. Okay, I did mention charge controllers, batteries, backup generators. Now there's a different type of inverter for a off-grid system. But off-grid is a different type of inverter than a grid-tie inverter. So that's what you have to have hooked up, and that goes to your house when your house has needs for AC power. And just that conversion from DC to AC, you lose a little bit of power. And like I said, DC does not travel well. It is possible to have DC outlets in your house. That might be a way to lessen the loss of power that happens from converting DC power to AC power. And nowadays, there are some appliances that do run on DC power. There's some refrigerators out there. There's some deep freezers out there. Basically, there's some lights, some small appliances here and there. And appliance companies that run off of DC power, they cater to truck drivers. Well, and RV owners, too. Okay, so that's the big difference. I wanted to introduce those two terms, AC and DC power, and off-grid and grid-tie power. The main thing to keep in mind is grid-tie power comes with a lot of government subsidies. And so that might make it worth your while to go through all this and have the government pay for some or all of your solar panels on your house, because the end result would be a lot lower electricity bill. All right, so on with the interview with Angry American. Enjoy. Okay, I'm joined with Angry American here, who is not only an author and has written several great books, but also he has a lot of experience with off-grid power. Thanks again, Angry American, for joining us here at the Survival in Motion podcast.
Thanks for having me again, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah. What's been your experience with off-grid or grid-tie power?
Well, I have a system I built here, and I build small ones. I build a lot of small systems, and by small, I mean really small. I mean things with like a single panel and some AGM batteries, deep cycle style batteries, and Pelican cases and whatnot. So if, say, a storm was to come through and knock your power out, if you don't have backup power, you could pull one of these things out in your house and charge phones, even with an inverter. You could run your TV or ceiling fan, that kind of stuff. I like them for camping trips, take them with me, because I build like USB ports into the cases and stuff. So, again, you can keep your phone charged, you know, GPS, you can charge batteries, lanterns, flashlights, whatever. And it's just a way to have some power.
Yeah, you mentioned these are trailers, right?
Well, no, these are even smaller than that. These ones are like built in Pelican boxes, like I said, the suitcase style. But the big system that I have, yeah, that's built into an 8x12 enclosed trailer. It only has 3,600 watts worth of panels connected to it, but it holds 8 kilowatt hours of power, so 8,000 watt hours. So you can run 1,000 watts for 8 hours or 8,000 watts for 1 hour.
Where do you get the equipment for this?
Canadian Solar. That's where my panels came from. The meat and potatoes of my solar system is made by a company called Sonin, which utilizes Sony lithium ion batteries and an Outback inverter to create the 110 or 240, actually. Then there's also a Solar Edge inverter that the array comes into, so the panels come into that, and it converts that 420 volts DC into 240 volt AC, which then charges those batteries in the cabinet. And then the Outback inverter on the other side converts to the 120-240 for the load, for anything I actually want to run.
So your house is off-grid, right?
No, my house is on-grid. In Florida, you are not allowed to have an off-grid solar system.
Okay.
You must be grid-tied. The power companies managed to get that piece of legislation passed, and so you can't have a non-grid tied. And the ridiculous argument behind it is the power companies say, well, If our power goes out and people have solar panels, then they'll be back feeding the system, which is absurd. If my house is off grid, by nature, I don't have grid tied to it, but they won't let you do that.
Well, that's what government's for, right? Is helping out. If any of our listeners were able to have a totally off-grid house, just average three-bedroom, two-bath, how would you advise them?
Save their pennies, because that's going to be a very expensive install. You know, I've got right around $25,000 invested in my system. That's for the panels. Now, that includes trailer, inverters, the unit itself. You know, you're going to look at a substantial investment if you want to run a conventional three-bedroom house. But when you start talking about alternative power like solar, you have to start thinking about power in an entirely different mindset. We live in a country where power is abundant and relatively cheap. And, you know, we walk into a room, we flip on a light switch, we do what we need, we can walk out. Sometimes you don't turn that light off, or we fall asleep with the TV going, that kind of thing. When you're living in a house that is totally off-grid and only supplied by the power that solar and wind can generate, maybe water, depending on where you are, you think about power differently. You look at it as a precious resource that it actually is. And so you conserve things. You also modify the appliances you have. You can get 12-volt DC refrigerators and freezers, for example, because there's a pretty heavy loss of close to 25% when you're converting DC to AC. You actually lose power just to do that. So the more stuff you can run off DC before the conversion, the better off you are. And you can wire your house for 12-volt lighting. You know, all your lamps, your light fixtures, all that stuff can be 12-volt. And all that will save on the draw. It'll bring down your consumption.
I mean, we're talking about like a plug in the wall, not only for AC, but a DC plug right next to it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. When I build a new house, which I want to do, I just don't know when I'm going to do it, that's exactly how it'll be wired. It'll have parallel electrical systems inside of it for DC and AC. And you can accomplish any voltage you want with DC, too. AC uses a transformer. DC uses a rectifier. So you can establish any voltage you want wherever you need it.
Well, assuming you'd have, you know, off-grid battery systems, what was the brand you mentioned earlier?
They're Sony lithium-ion batteries, yeah.
Does it matter 12, 24, or 48 volts?
Most of your large-scale solar systems don't run on 12 volt. They step the voltages up higher into, like, 48 volts, because you're getting more bang for your buck that way. Depending on the batteries you're running. Like if you're going to run, let's say, lead-acid batteries, you're going to build a simple solar system. You're going to run it on 12 volt. You're going to have some panels hooked to with an inverter. And you're going to use golf cart batteries. We'll use those as an example. You want to have enough batteries in your bank so that at max peak load, you will never discharge those batteries below 50% of their total capacity. Because the death for lead-acid batteries is that cycle. Every one of those cycles is a countdown on the life of that battery. So every time you discharge a battery and recharge it, you're shortening its life. And you can extend that by never discharging them below 50%. Now, you can step up to like AGMs, absorb glass mat batteries, or like lithium ions, which I can discharge down to 10% and then recharge, and it doesn't affect them. But they're also substantially more expensive.
Do they still have a lifespan of at most 10 years?
A decade, maybe 15 years, you know. It's about cycles, too. You got to remember that. So the system I have here is built inside an enclosed trailer, so it's portable. Therefore, it's not a grid-tied system. I don't have it grid-tied. And when it's just sitting here not being utilized, it runs my shop. So I have a 50-amp RV receptacle on the side of my shop. I just plug the trailer into it. And I go inside, and there's lights wired up and receptacles and everything, and it powers my building. Now, if there was a hurricane came through and knocked the power out, I would relocate that to the side of my house, and I would run my generator during the day off and on a little bit for the air conditioner to keep it cool, and I would utilize the solar system, particularly at night, to keep the refrigerators and freezers going and lights and that kind of stuff, TVs, because they'll run all that fine at night with no problem. And then you can fire the generator up during the day when you really need central air and that kind of stuff to keep it cool. And then the system will recharge itself through the panels.
You might have said this, but how many kilowatts are we talking about?
The system I have holds 8 kilowatt hours of power. And that's another consideration when you start talking solar, is you've got to look at all your appliances and figure out what their loads are and how much power they consume for, you know, any given time period. Like, you know, your refrigerator may be 485 watts when it's running. Well, how many hours a day does it run? You know, they don't run all day. They run intermittently. But you got to factor these things in. So you figure a 100-watt incandescent light bulb running for 8 hours is 800 watts of power you've consumed.
Okay. What kind of generator, backup generator, do you have?
A Generac. I have a 15 kW Generac. I have a 7,500 watt Honda, and then I have a 2,000 EU Honda as well. I'm not a fan of the 5,500 watt generators because what folks don't realize about those is they are not meant for continuous load use. They don't have an oil filter on them. They're very difficult to change oil on. Like my 15 kW Generac that I have has a spin-off oil filter and is made to be able to change the oil in it really, really fast. So when it's running, I'll change the oil in that machine every 8 hours. So every time the tank runs low on fuel and it's time to fuel it, I shut it down. And I'm lazy, so I pick it up with my tractor. It's got a lift in my eye. I lift it up in the air where I can get to it nice and easy. I change the oil in it, refuel it, fire it back up, hook it back up to the house, you know, because it's just like your car. I mean, you know, if you don't service your car and change the oil in it, the engine's not going to last. These generators are even worse because they're just not meant to be ran continuously nonstop. That's the benefit of like a diesel generator. If you can get into a diesel generator, they're designed for continuous load use. Ultimately, that's my goal. You
know? And your Generac, what is that, gasoline?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gasoline.
Okay. And you change the oil every 8 hours?
Every 8 hours, yep. I've got a box of 16 oil filters I keep in the shop so that, you know, if I need to run that thing for a week, I got enough oil filters to change it. And it's an expensive proposition. I mean, that generator burns 37 gallons of gas a day if I run it 24 hours a day.
Wow.
But that's why I keep 300 gallons of gas stored here in my property. I have fuel tanks, and a fuel company comes and services the tanks and fills them. And I don't go to the gas station. I buy all my fuel, get all my fuel right here at the house. So.
Yeah. Have you looked into green diesel, you know, what do you call it?
Oh, biodiesel?
Biodiesel, yes.
No, I haven't because I don't have a reliable source of used oil, you know. And I've got enough projects going on and things I'm trying to keep maintained and trying to start that project to be able to do it right. It's not something I'm interested in. I have diesel trucks and whatnot, but I wouldn't want to run that in them, especially with these new engines and the emission stuff that's on them and stuff. I don't even know if they'd run. I don't know if they'd burn that or not. Older ones certainly would. I had an old 82 Cummins that would have burned anything you poured into it from kerosene to grease probably.
Do you have any preference as far as name brands on all this equipment, like the inverter?
Well, you know, I would stick with some of the bigger names like Outback, those kind of companies. Solar Edge is a good one, especially if you're doing grid tie stuff because Solar Edge has to be grid tied to work, which I cheat it and make it run anyway. The way we wired it up, it doesn't know it's not on the grid. Some of the stuff like Harbor Freight and those kind of little inverters you see, I wouldn't trust them. You know, a decent inverter, like my Solar Edge inverter alone was like $2,500. So a $300 inverter from Harbor Freight or somewhere else like that, that's not going to be that good an inverter. Solar Edge is a 5,500 watt inverter, so it can push 5,500 watts of power out. And you want stuff designed for solar applications. You see inverters everywhere today. Trace is another good one. You want one that's designed for solar power, that's not designed for you to use in the back of your SUV to blow up an air mattress, you know, that kind of thing. You need something quality that'll get the job done.
Where would you recommend somebody go to learn about all this stuff? Do you know of any good YouTube channels or books?
Honestly, I got to say no on that. I don't. I've kind of self-taught myself everything I know about solar. Well, that and I had over 20 years as an industrial electrician, so I already understood power. And so it wasn't that big a jump to make it to solar. It's just DC in and AC out, so it's not that complicated. And that's another thing. It's not as complicated as people make it seem. A basic solar system is very, very simple. You have a solar array, a charge controller, battery bank, and an inverter. They're not that complicated. And really, anybody can build one of these things. Let me just see here. I pulled up one from the inverter store. See, even these guys, their inverters are so small. Here's a 30 kW pure sine wave inverter, 300 volt DC, 240 volt AC, split phase for 10.5. That gives you an idea of the kind of numbers that you're looking at to get into this stuff.
What's that website you're looking at?
That is theinverterstore.com. They're a pretty good outfit.
Is that the only website you deal with, or are there others?
Well, I haven't purchased anything off the web. I've dealt directly with manufacturers, and then some friends that are in the business get me the stuff I'm looking for generally. You do need to be careful because there's so much garbage out there, for lack of a better term. I hate to say that, but there is. and you don't want to buy cheap stuff. You need things that are designed for continuous load, continuous use, that are pretty simple, and plug and play is the best way to go. And with solar panels, you know, avoid the ones that are 12 volt. You know, you want to step up. And two, if you can, avoid solar panels with microgrid inverters. They're just a pain in the ass. If my panels have them, I wish they didn't, but they do. And it's another expense. You know, I mean, I paid $2,500 or so for the inverter, and then I had to spend another like $1,800 on these little controllers that mount to each solar panel. So prices start adding up quick, you know.
What do you think about wind power as a backup or micro hydro, stuff like that?
Oh, I like both of them. I'd love to have a windmill, but with my system, I can't incorporate a windmill. And micro hydro, too. If you've got flowing water, there's no better way to generate power than that, because it's a constant given at all times. Unlike solar, where clouds can move in and distort the amount of UV you're getting, or the wind may lay down and your windmill won't work. But if you've got a flowing water, you can set power up that'll run all the time.
That works at nighttime.
Yeah, it works 24 hours a day, and it doesn't take a lot of flow really either. The new little turbine-style hydro generators, you know, you'll install a pipe in your waterway, say a 6-inch pipe, and you just keep running it down, and you'll neck it down to, say, 3 or 4 inch. And you can even start bigger than 6-inch. You can start with a 12-inch pipe up there. And what you're doing is you're reducing that water and constantly adding pressure to it. So by the time it comes to the other end of that pipe where the turbine is, that water's screaming. And it's got a lot of pressure behind it, and it turns those little turbines great. There is one guy who I highly, highly recommend. Scott Hunt is his name, but that's not what he goes by. Let me find his page. I think it's Engineer
557 or something.
Yeah, 557. You've got him. It's Engineer 557.
Yeah, I'll put the link in the show notes.
If you are looking for alternative power or alternative ways to pump water, that is your go-to guy. He is extremely knowledgeable, and he will come out and do an evaluation for you and design a system, build it, and install it if you want him to. He does a lot of work with ram pumps, which we were talking about flow and water. A ram pump is a non-electrical means that you can push water uphill.
I think I've seen those, yeah.
Yeah, as long as you have moving water, it'll do it. It doesn't move a lot of water, but that's not the point behind the thing. So there's a lot of ways to do this stuff to be able to get away from having to rely totally on the machine that's around us, be it power companies, water companies, sewage companies, you know, all that stuff that we have to deal with on a daily basis. There are real easy ways to get around it. And there's some parts of the country that are real friendly to it, you know, like Tennessee and Texas in particular. Tennessee has no building codes. You can do whatever the hell you want. Neither does parts of Texas. You can go out there and build anything you want. The only permit you got to pull, like in Tennessee, is your septic tank, and you buy that over the counter at the hardware store. So you can go up there and build anything you want and power it however you feel like, and no one's going to say anything to you.
Yeah, a friend of mine in Texas built a whole house, and then right as he was finishing it up, somebody from the county just drove up the driveway and said, "Hey, you know, this is a nice house here. Do you have a permit?" And he said, "No." And the county guy said, "Would you like to buy one?" Well, yeah. So he paid, yeah. I think, less than $100 for a house permit after the house was built. It was great.
Yep. And Tennessee's like that, too. I mean, there's no inspections. There's no county guy going to roll up on you and ask what you're doing either. You know, and there's other states that way, too. I just know Tennessee's that way because I'm looking at property up there. I would like to have a place up there someday. So.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate you letting me pick your brain about off-grid power.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's curious, I would send them immediately to Engineer 775. Go check out Scott's channel. I watch his videos sometimes when I'm tinkering around or trying to figure something out, too, because they're so good. The guy's – he's forgot more than I'll ever learn about this stuff.
He's also got a really good book, as I recall.
Yeah, he does. And he's a genuinely nice guy. He really is. So.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Well, thanks for having me on, brother. I hope that helps a little bit. And ever anything I can do in the future, just give me a shout.
Will do. Will do. Thanks.
And there you have it. Thanks again to Angry American for appearing at the Survival in Motion podcast. Yeah. I recommend that you check out his collection of books at Amazon or wherever they are sold. I know some of his books are traditionally published, so they might be available in airports or wherever. His book number one was Going Home, and he has several other books that he has for sale. And watch for his TV show. He's doing very well with his book series, Going Home. I think he has 8 or 9, but don't quote me on that. By the way, I wanted to just mention Walt Browning, who was a guest on this podcast a couple months ago. He now has another book out, Charlie's Requiem, Retribution. This is book 4. I've read book 1 of the Charlie's Requiem series. I would definitely recommend it, as well as the Book of Frank, which I cannot say I have read. He's being picked up by a traditional book publisher. So congratulations to Walt Browning, and check out his book, Charlie's Requiem, Retribution. In fact, for both of those authors, Angry American and Walt Browning, I know they would appreciate me saying this. Not only should you check out their books, but give them a honest review. All right, I'm just closing up here on this podcast. I wanted to thank you for listening to it. Pretty soon, our next podcast or two will be Ron Foster. He's a prepper author, and prepper authors have universally been friendly to me. It's a good group of people, and I look forward to meeting more prepper authors. Anyway, Ron Foster wrote a book. We're going to be talking about it in the next podcast. The Youth Challenged Flatulent Person's Guide. In other words, the Old Farts Guide book. So that's the name of the book we're going to be talking about. I'll be asking him a few questions. Might make for an awkward gift idea, but you know, every author is entitled to title their book however they want. I can just imagine somebody opening up like a gift saying, you know, what are you saying, that I'm an old fart, you know, that kind of thing. And it's not a book filled with gastrointestinal humor, as you might suspect. It's a serious prepping book. So I'm looking forward to talking to that author about that book. Take a couple of Beano pills and listen in when that podcast is ready. As we fade out here, I want to play a song that I snuck in a reference to in my book that will be out soon. In fact, I thought it would be out last fall, but here we are, it's still not out, but I still think it'll come out soon. I snuck a reference to this song, and this song is a serious song. I've heard the title before, and I thought it was a joke, but it's a serious song, and it came out in the World War II days. But I do that with my books. I sneak in references. You know, the EMP 1 book, I think it was chapters 13 and 14, I snuck in several references to movies about crazy people. You know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Taxi Driver, Apocalypse Now, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, I think it was called. A couple of just off-the-wall movies, I just have a reference to them in chapters 13 and 14 of the first EMP book, which was called EMP, The End of the Grid as We Know It. This next book, I'm sneaking in a few references here and there of this song that I'm going to close out with. Speaking of which, I hear the music now. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me on the Survival in Motion podcast. God bless.
Give him credit for a son of a gun of a gun.